Zito from 7th to 1st in the final event. You are a champion.
And Oleksiak has done it! The girl from the 6th has got 6 Olympic medals!
The substitute for Canada just about gets it through! It's a glory gold for Canada!
Kathy Lefty goes up to Graham, takes the lead, looks a winner, draws away from Graham and Mary. This is a famous victory, a magnificent performance. What a legend. What a champion.
It is Off the Podium, an Olympics podcast coming to you once again for an athlete's interview today, going back to the sport of triathlon and speaking to Natalie Van Cuverden. Now, Natalie has a fantastic tale to tell about her career progression, rising through the ranks, started off as a swimmer and a runner, got poached into triathlon and had a pretty quick success rate in the sport, was traveling the world basically within 4 months of picking up the sport and hitting the world stage, and had some great success as a junior, which led her towards a Olympic appearance in Tokyo that unfortunately didn't happen. Now, it's quite a controversial decision not to add Natalie to the team for the Tokyo Olympics, and Natalie's very open and honest about exactly what happened, talking about the politics of the sport, which essentially cost her a position on that team, and how she's using the disappointment of missing out on the Olympics 3 years ago towards making her debut later this year in Paris. We're finding out just how close she is to that appearance, how she's feeling, and just what is going to take for her to get on that plane to Paris. We also learn a little bit about her experiences at the Commonwealth Games 2 years ago, where she walked away with a bronze medal as part of the mixed relay team. Hear a little bit more about the mixed relay element of triathlon, which I always love to hear. Find out why we're probably not going to hear her singing karaoke anytime soon, and just what the possibilities would be for her to beat Emma McKeon in a triathlon. Now, it's a left of field question that I bet you weren't expecting to hear Natalie talk about today, but I think you're going to get excited when you hear the answer around it. So stay tuned for that in this chat as we speak with Australian triathlete Natalie Van Cuverden. We're getting back into the great sport of triathlon today, and I'm very excited to speak to our next guest. Currently the number one ranked female triathlete in Australia on the path towards her debut Olympics in Paris this year. She's a Commonwealth Games medalist, has achieved a great deal around the world on the world triathlon circuit, and I'm so pumped to learn about her journey from the beginning right through to the Olympics in a couple of months. It's a pleasure to welcome to Off the Podium, Natalie Van Cuverden. Natalie, first of all, welcome to Off the Podium.
Thank you very much.
It's exciting to have you here because we've really been getting into triathlon recently. We've had so many triathletes on the show, and anybody who listens to this show knows we like a sport with multiple disciplines. None of these easy sports, right, Natalie, where you're just going to do one thing. You know, we like these tricky ones where you've got to combine three things into one. That's where it's all at, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I think we've even combined five things into one, maybe.
Exactly.
We have to go to the gym. We have to do transitions. It's, none many things to our sport, I think.
Just you like to kind of make it interesting, which I love sort of reading about your career and sort of how you got into the sport, because you were basically a swimmer as a junior athlete, did a bit of cross country as well. It only seemed like the cycling part was missing. So how do you go from a pretty decent swimmer, pretty decent cross country athlete, into adding a bicycle leg to it and becoming a triathlete?
Yeah, so when I was about 16 years old, I was still competing in 5K and 10K open water swims. And I actually was New South Wales All Schools champion in cross country. And at the time, everyone was like, oh, hey, why don't you do triathlon? And I honestly had never really heard about triathlon. I knew Erin Dempsen. She went to my high school. And, I watched her win a medal, which was quite cool because being another local girl, it was something to aspire to. But, I just did some local triathlons. And then I actually did All Schools Triathlon. I think I placed Nationals Triathlon. And I think I was fourth place.
Wow.
In my first ever time on the road with other girls, so that was a bit of a surprise, to be honest. And from that kind of point onwards, I got picked up into a New South Wales Institute of Sport like development sort of squad with Jamie Turner at the time in Wollongong, and that was my last year of school. And I kind of thought, oh well, I can't really commit to this right now, like I'm finishing my HSC, let's see where this brings me afterwards. And I competed in the junior series in 2010. And yeah, about 4 months later, I qualified for Junior World Champs in Beijing. I think I had the fastest combined swim and bike time in Australia at the time.
Wow.
So yeah, I had a very fast trajectory, I suppose, into the world of doing triathlon full time. And yeah, even 1 year later, I did my first WTS. So yeah, it was a crazy start to my triathlon journey.
What is it about your, I guess, style and anything that people sort of saying, suggesting triathlon? Was it just because you were good at running and swimming, or was there something more to it that people were kind of going, come over to triathlon?
Not at all, really. It was just kind of like a side sort of comment, like, oh, have you thought about maybe doing triathlon? And in my sort of time, I suppose at school, I didn't even know what triathlon sort of was. It wasn't a big sport that was really pushed upon us. So yeah, it was just like out of coincidence that later in my career, I kind of stopped swimming a bit less. And yeah, I got in on board with triathlon. And once I kind of got into the community of triathlon, I met the right people. And that kind of led me to, yeah, getting into what I do now.
Was it something that when you gave it a try, and obviously you're achieving success pretty early on, so that probably helps with the liking of the sport, but was it something that you enjoyed immediately, or did it take you a little bit of time to sort of warm up to it?
I mean, I loved it. I suppose when you're good at a ton of two things, and yeah, at the time I was also, yeah, putting myself in the race a little bit. It was really exciting as a junior, but I was never the best junior by far in my first sort of races. So yeah, I definitely had a long way to go, and it wasn't the easiest start to my career. Everyone's kind of like telling you like where to go, what you should be doing. I was also dealing with like a bit of an eating disorder at the time. Yeah, it wasn't the easiest start, but I definitely must have enjoyed it because, yeah, it was good. You make a group of friends, and I think that's important as a junior. You have a good group of people around you, and that brings you to training every day.
I always find it interesting when we talk to triathletes and how it always seems to be two of the legs are kind of something you do, and then it's the third one that you add. You might be the first one that I've sort of spoken to that cycling was that third one that you didn't really do. Were you just a typical Aussie kid? You rode around on your bike a lot? Was this something that you kind of dabbled in, or was cycling just completely new to you?
I mean, as a kid, you have your bike, you know, go on bike rides with your parents. And yeah, but I actually nearly failed the drafting test, I suppose, that you have to do as a junior to try and make it to nationals, because I never really ridden. But for me, it was just, I did a 5K water swim, and then at Penrith Regatta Centre, I got on my bike and I did a few laps and then I went home, you know. It wasn't like I had any proper training. It was just, even for running, it was just, you run around a block, you know, with your old Timex watch. It wasn't about how fast you were going or the distance. You just, yeah, did a lap of the block. And I think that was pretty similar to cycling for me at the start. It was just, yeah, getting the rhythm of getting into cycling and getting comfortable in the drops and just, yeah, getting skills.
Were there other sports that you took part in outside of swimming and cross country ultimately before you did that switch to triathlon?
I've been doing about netball for about 10 years.
Wow.
But yeah, I used to, very similar to what I do now, I'm at 5 o'clock in the morning, we went for our run, and then I would get home, have breakfast, and then head to netball in the afternoon. So yeah, it's, I think I've grown up with doing a lot of stuff and keeping myself sort of busy. And yeah, like I said, I think it's keeps us disciplined, I suppose, as a child. Like, yeah, keep a good schedule and keep on routine. And yeah, it's kind of helped me now, I think.
It makes sense then that you do a sport with three different disciplines that you kind of were doing so many things as a child, basically.
Yeah, I know. It does make sense, doesn't it? But yeah, I think, yeah, even swimming-wise, you know, there's so many strokes you can choose from. I think, yeah, when you're young, you can do everything or you can try and specialize in one. So yeah, I think from early on, I was like, oh, I'm not doing any butterfly or breaststroke. I'm doing freestyle.
That's the one. That's the one to stick to.
Yeah.
Which, did you have aspirations then with swimming cross country for the Olympics? Was this something that you sort of looked at as a child as something to pursue towards?
Actually, no, never. I was never the best swimmer. And I suppose in my later years, I suppose it was a bit of a shock to me that I was winning these races, like all schools cross country and stuff, because I was just, yeah, running part of swimming and running just to keep fit when I wasn't going to swimming training. So, yeah, I never really thought that I would be doing this as my career, which is exciting and also a bit like, yeah, I'm kind of grateful for that in some way because, yeah, I did have that experience as a kid to do whatever I, like, kind of wanted and, like, dabbled in everything. So, yeah, it's been a good journey to try and have that Olympics as my aspiration.
And having Erin, of course, I mean, obviously a little bit after you were no doubt at school, but I believe she came from the same school and still to this day, our last Olympic medalist in triathlon. I mean, kind of what's it like to sort of have somebody from your area? I'm sure you've probably bumped shoulders with her over the years, kind of like having someone like that to look towards, because I did read a comment that she was a bit of a local sporting icon for you.
Yeah, I mean, at the time I didn't really think much of it because I didn't really know about triathlon, but when she was kind of finishing her career, I was jumping still into doing WTS. So yeah, we had many conversations about, we even still joke now, sometimes we'd slide into each other's DMs, I suppose, and just chat about local stuff because we grew up in the same area and we can relate to, a lot of hardships and what we've both kind of been through in our own like triathlon journey. So yeah, I appreciate what she's had for me in my junior years and still supporting me now. So it's been great.
Because is Campbelltown a bit of a triathlon hotbed now, basically? A couple of you come from there? Because, I mean, I think of Campbelltown, it's, I don't necessarily think of triathlon as maybe the sport that would come from down there.
I mean, no, I've always, MacArthur Triathlon Club has always been very supportive towards me. I know I have a lot of people that always reach out to me after races and, deliver their support, and they always know I can rely on them if I have a problem or need some help. So that's been a great part of my journey because I definitely started there. I don't think that triathlon is a mecca of Campbelltown, but we definitely have a great area. But we definitely have a great area to train and develop as an athlete. So it's a good spot.
What's that like 4 months basically after joining a circuit that you're all of a sudden going to a junior world championships? I mean, quite a quick progression there heading to Beijing. I mean, was that the first time then you had been overseas to compete in a sport?
Yeah, that was the first time. And that year actually I was away for 4 months. So, going from nothing to everything. We gave it everything that year to try and be the best juniors in the world. And like I said, I had other girls around me. I actually had two other girls in my group at the time that also qualified for junior world. So we had like a little group together, and we did some European cups, and I think I was first and second in some junior European cups. So it was a great first year in the sport for me.
Must be a pretty good confidence boost then for something that's pretty fresh to you, all of a sudden be coming back home with a couple of golds and silvers around the neck.
Yeah, I mean, I had very high aspirations for Beijing, considering I came off a very good domestic and earlier European season. But unfortunately, I crashed. I still have the scar on my hip to show it. So it wasn't my best junior worlds, and unfortunately, it was my last junior worlds. I think it was a great. It showed me that I do have the potential to hopefully do this an elite pathway. And whereas my first WTS, not even a year later.
What is the? Can you give us a bit of a rundown of what the WTS circuit is like, particularly for somebody starting off afresh? Obviously, you've been on the circuit for quite some time now, but do you sort of remember getting thrust into that competitive environment at that age and what that was like?
I suppose I really looked up to a lot of people, especially the Australian women at the time. We had so many great women, and actually it was really hard to get onto a WTS start list. The first start list I rolled onto was Sydney WTS, which was amazing because it was my home. I think I was the seventh or eighth Australian woman to roll onto that start list. So I was around a very high caliber of women. But it was very nerve-wracking, and I actually had a good race. I made the front group, and I think I maybe finished 37th for my first WTS. So it was exciting. And I think that's gave me the opportunity to show the high performance team at the time that I was capable of racing more. And I'm pretty sure I raced the whole series pretty much that year. So it was a great start.
And we've seen progression through the sport. We talked to Matt Hauser a couple of months back just about some of these countries now that we're seeing come into the foray of the sport. It's much more than just the traditional countries we've seen in triathlon. I mean, what's that been like sort of through your journey through that, to see some other nations entering the fray into triathlon? It's not just Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, sort of these countries. We're getting, Bermuda and Norway and places like that, that maybe some of these traditional triathlon countries aren't used to getting beaten by.
I mean, I think it's great for the sport actually, because they've actually brought a lot of race opportunities for us. Like, I don't think we've ever thought we would race in Bermuda, and it wasn't for Flora Duffy. And I think that was such an awesome experience because the crowds were amazing there for the women's race. And we don't get that very often. It's normally the men that get the bigger crowd. So to have a women's race that was just so, so crowded was an amazing experience. And I think even with Christian and Gustav, that brought in the Bergen World Cup a few years ago. So, yeah, I think it's great to see such development in the sport. And obviously, yeah, the Olympics also showcase that we have such a wide range of countries now competing. And I think it only can get better. Yeah, like I said, they're very developmental countries still, but they're showing that they have the power to do so. And, yeah, I think they're going to be ones to watch in the near future because they're also very young.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. We keep just talking about Norway on this show, that far more than just a winter powerhouse now. They're doing so well in our summer sports now that they're getting quite scary, the Norwegians, at how good they're getting at all the different sports.
I know, it's crazy, but, yeah, it must be all the indoor training, riding or something. It's giving them some good mental toughness out there. And, yeah, it's great to see that, yeah, with Sweden and other countries like that, there's the young development girls now that are, yeah, coming through and actually winning World Cups. So, yeah, it's really good for the sport.
Are there other countries that we aren't really aware of, maybe some of us casual observers who are sort of only seeing triathlon at the Commonwealth Games and the Olympics, countries that we really need to be keeping an eye on, Natalie, for the future?
Oh, that's a very hard question.
That's my one for the interview. You get one hard question for the interview.
Oh, I don't know, to be honest. This is probably not going to answer the question, but I think France, honestly, because for me, I've raced French Grand Prix and I've seen how they develop their juniors, and they have a very talented development people coming up through racing the Grand Prix from a very young age. I know that wasn't the question that you asked me, but I think it's a very, they have such a good structure, and every year they bring in another 20-year-old that's coming out and winning or top five in a WTS. So they're doing something right there. It's good for France because they've got a wide selection of girls and guys to choose from now.
Probably a good idea to do that so you can peak sort of in a year you're hosting the Olympics, right? So basically, the Americans are probably coming in 4 years' time. But then we've got 8 years to really kind of, you know, just make sure that we're going along swimmingly for Brisbane, right?
Yeah, it's cool, actually. I mean, I obviously probably won't be there in Brisbane.
Oh, don't say that. You'll be there. Come on, you're still young.
It's nice to have it back in Australia. I remember I went and watched Sydney Olympics, part of school. So, yeah, it'd be great to have something back in our country again. To inspire and develop more talent, and hopefully we can be back on the world stage in all different sports.
Well, I'm sure you would remember it too. I mean, I vividly remember Sydney. The first medal event of those Olympics was the women's triathlon. I remember being glued to the TVs. Michaela Jones got the silver ultimately and being so disappointed as a 13-year-old that we didn't get the gold. But, I mean, it was such a great way to open the Olympics and to debut the sport. So, I mean, were you there? Were you watching that triathlon at all I think you were about eight probably around then, wouldn't you be?
About nine. Yeah, eight or nine, I suppose. Yeah, but like I said, I actually had no idea what triathlon was. It sounds really bad. But for me, I didn't even – sometimes people ask me, oh, who got first, third or second in the Sydney? I'm like, I'm sorry, I have no idea. It sounds really bad. But for me, like, when I did race my first WTS in Sydney and, like, that iconic location of Sydney Harbour, and I know the Olympics race there, I think that was really special to me, and special to a lot of people. So – yeah, it's very iconic.
Through that progression, ultimately, you have a very good year in 2018, but obviously just going through the ranks, was Rio ever a possibility? Were you just sort of like, were you getting to a point where that could have ever been a possibility, or kind of how were the results tracking for a potential early Olympic appearance in 2016?
Oh, I mean, I don't think Rio was, I was there, but I wasn't there. Like, I was a regular on WTS circuit, but I wasn't up with those top women. So, yeah, I think for me, that's when I thought, okay, well, I could have a chance of going to the test event, and then let's look towards Tokyo. That was definitely my main focus.
And then sort of as touching on 2018, sort of some of the performances you had there, we're talking great success on the mixed relay team and obviously on that W2S was, again, Commonwealth Games. Was that something that happened a little bit earlier in the year? Perhaps if that was later in the year, that might have been a possibility for the Gold Coast?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, because obviously I was third in WTS and Abu Dhabi, which was maybe 1 or 2 months before Commonwealth Games. And then, yeah, I had some good World Cup results also around that. So I think I just peaked a little bit too late to kind of put my foot forward for Commonwealth Games. But, yeah, 2018 was a fantastic year for me. So without the Commonwealth Games or not, I still knew that, yeah, I had a great year tracking towards, yeah, Tokyo Olympics.
Which, with the mixed relay, we talked to Matt a lot about that. I mean, sort of obviously it seems so many triathletes enjoy this mixed relay event that we're seeing out there. I mean, how much fun is it for generally an individual sport that you've got an opportunity to have teammates and actually compete with your teammates?
Yeah, it's a great opportunity that we have now to race afterwards. And I think it shows that if you have a good performance in the individual race, you can be selected to race the relay. And it does add a little bit of pressure because you want to perform for your teammates. And I think now more than, maybe a little bit less now, but because we girls are going second and fourth, I feel a little bit less pressure because the first leg is, I mean, the males will know now, the first leg is a very crucial high pressure leg. And if you stuff up leg one, then you feel very, very bad for your team. So no, I've been in many teams now and with many different people, and every relay is different, but I think we all come together and try and put our best foot forward because we know what opportunities we have leading into the Olympics and what that will give us at the Olympics. So yeah, hopefully over the next relay opportunities that we do have, because we haven't had that many, unfortunately, for the past few years, we can try and get a good team together and build up some confidence as a team and, work together.
How much does that weigh in the mind in, say, the individual event that, say, for example, you're not in with the shot of a medal or you're not within a shot of where you want to be, but you know that you've got to keep pushing forward because you've still got a spot on the line for the mixed relay. Is that something that will cross your mind at a certain point in a race once, say, maybe it hasn't gone to the original plan you were thinking it was going to go to?
It's kind of changed over the years, to be honest. I suppose leading into Tokyo, they were very mixed relay focused because that was the first time we had a very good opportunity to have a medal in Tokyo. So they were kind of picking and choosing whoever they kind of wanted for the relay rather than like first and second. So it was very up in the air. So we just raced to try and be able to be the best that we could for us. But over the last few years, I've had a bit more clear selection sort of policy around that. So yeah, not particularly, but yeah, you're definitely like, I want to get a spot on the mixed relay team because that's the way I can show selectors that I can do the individual and I can be a good relay athlete. So yeah, it's very important for all of us to race well first individual, but yeah, the mixed relay is kind of always second in our mind. It's like you've raced well, now you get the opportunity to do it. So yeah, it's just like a nice side gig at them. Yeah.
One of these ones where you have the ability. I mean, I love these sports when they have additional medal opportunities, right? Like, it's all well and good to talk about how great Michael Phelps is because he's a legend, don't get me wrong. But of course he can win like 25 gold medals because he's got like 25 events that he can win medals in, whereas certain sports like triathlon until previously before Tokyo, you only had one chance to win a medal. So now that it kind of opens that field up, right, that we can be talking here to you in 8 years' time as, you know, four-time Olympic gold medalist because you've had that opportunity at two different Olympic Games, right?
Yeah, it's very true, actually. Yeah, it's like I think after Emma McKee maybe won 8 or 9 gold medals in last Olympics. I was like, oh, we can't even do that. But I think it's great now that even maybe if we don't have the best performance that we have in the individual race, we can kind of, maybe 2 days later, we can mentally switch back on and go give it all for our team. And I think that sometimes brings out the best in us. We actually, the individual race maybe like was a bit of a warm up and then we can, go full gas for 20 minutes in the mixed relay. So yeah, it's a great opportunity now for us to, hopefully do a little bit better than what we did in Tokyo and, hopefully put our best foot forward in the next couple of races that we do have.
I want to touch on Tokyo, but one random question that I don't think I've ever asked a triathlete. You mentioned Emma McKeon. Do you ever sometimes think that you're at the Olympic Village, you've both done your events and there's Emma just sitting around, right? And you probably go like, hey, Emma, like I'm competitive, you're competitive. You might beat me in a swimming race, right? But I reckon I've got you in a triathlon. Or you go to like an Anna Mears or a Rowan Browning. In their individual sports, they're probably going to beat you, Natalie. But like you know that if you combine all three, you're going to do it. So, I mean, I don't know. Like if that's just some competitive nature that you ever sort of look and go, all right, Emma, you beat me in the pool, but I bet you I can combine the bike and the run and I can still kick your ass.
Oh, no. I think we all train our butts off in our own individual sports, And I think I have total respect for everybody because I know how hard we work to get to this level. So maybe on the side, I do think that, like, oh, they did a triathlon. Because I think even like Matt Horton now is kind of maybe going to dibble in triathlon. So, it's great to see that some of us maybe have a bit of an interest in triathlon. So, it's good.
It'd be interesting if you could do like some sort of relay where, you know, you have like, say, yourself, you know, professional triathletes, right? But then you say allow Emma to do the swim leg, right? You know, you get like an Anna-Mir, I mean, she's past retirement now, but I'm just using her as an example. Then you get like a Rowan Bratt, like you get these people at the peak of their powers. If individually that would still obviously then beat someone like yourself who is trained over. I'm just trying to think of unique ways we could, you know, really like kind of like one of these, you know, ultimate championship style events to really see who comes out on top.
Well, I also thought about that for Super League actually, because when they have these like you can be the best swimmer or the best biker or the best runner, realistically you just bring a swimmer in and they could get your points to be the best.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't matter, you know. So yeah, you technically could they could just do the swim leg,
yep,
get on the bike and get lapped and they still get plenty of points. So
yeah,
it's actually a realistic concept when you think about it.
You're welcome. Well, triathlon, you can take that if you want. And, you know, you can use it for free. You're welcome. We always like to try and provide some ideas here on off the podium. Touched on Tokyo, obviously ultimately don't make that squad. Give us a bit of a rundown what happened there, Natalie.
So in 2020, I decided to go back overseas. I was lucky enough to have a visa that allowed me to go back. And I decided to do that because there was the French Grand Prix was starting, World Triathlon was bringing in some races, and they decided to have the World Championship. And I was over in Europe for nearly 2 years at the end of the period. But I suppose I was kind of pushed to the side. I went against what Triathlon Australia had said to stay in Australia, to do what the team was doing. In many instances, I was basically in some way or another blocked from racing or tried to sign different things so then I couldn't race, or athletes were voting on me for racing because I was doing something different to them. I was having pretty good races, actually. I was racing all the World Series races, still being quite consistent on the series. And I suppose for me, I kind of knew what was happening in Australia. I knew they were trying to plan on trying to get the three spots at the time because I was second ranked in the Olympic rankings and we just wanted to get three spots to make it safe that we had an extra person, for the relay. I kind of knew about how they were trying to manipulate the sort of system and I was trying to keep doing the best I was overseas to try and put my best foot forward for the team. By the time I got the phone call and I got the answer that it was a no, everything that I was second guessing about what I was doing and everything else about being overseas and them wanting me to come back to Australia, was all kind of true. It was very sad. It was lots of other stuff happened obviously, but yeah, it was very disappointing in the process that, yeah, I was the second Australian in the whole Olympic cycle. I wasn't chosen for the team of discretionary selection, as they were kind of focusing more on maybe a relay athlete and someone else that they had decided was better than me through racing, maybe some Oceania races or whatever. So yeah, it was a very hard period for me. I was very anti-Triathlon Australia for a very long time, because I didn't know what I did wrong. I thought I was doing everything right to put myself in the best world performance because that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to show them that I can race against the best. I can be at the best level that I can be leading into the Olympics. So I appealed and didn't win. So yeah, it was a hard time, but then yeah, once I got back onto the circuit after not making the team and obviously watching what happened in Tokyo, it was hard for me because I was like, I wanted to be there. No, I wanted to show them I could have a really great performance, and yeah, it was hard, but I hope that post this I've kind of got back on my two feet and get on the next road to Paris.
It's always these moments though that I guess does push you towards the next stage in your career, doesn't it? That you can sort of take that disappointment and no doubt all the pain and everything that came from that to push towards Paris. I mean, is that something that maybe on one of these hard days in the lead up to qualifying, hopefully for Paris, that you can kind of bottle up and take and make sure that this time around it's not going to go that same way?
Yeah, I think for a long time I was trying to race to prove to the Triathlon Australia that I was the best. which is the wrong way of racing. I should have raced to be the best athlete that I can be, and that's how you have your best performances. And I think over the year post the Olympics, I had to kind of work on getting out of that to try and race for me. I just hope that now, like, I've made the right decisions to put me on the best path for that. And unfortunately, it hasn't really worked out the smoothest way the last couple of years. Like, I've had a bit of coaching changes and stuff. So hopefully now the next 6 months I can get settled and work towards Paris as my goal.
Because it must be that unique case of, on the outside, it looks like triathlon's a very individual sport. But of course, as you said, you've got coaches, you've got federations, you've got things like that that are happening behind the scenes. That it's not just a simple case of I'm number whatever in the world, that's going to secure my spot. So obviously there are things that are out of your control that you've got to push through. You've got to push through those barriers in order to just keep doing what you've got to do to prove that you are worthy of a spot at the Olympics.
Yeah, I think we must be one of the only sports that don't use our world or Olympic ranking for us actually really to qualify in, like, these higher sort of nations. It doesn't matter what I finish in the Olympic rankings. I have to hit the criteria. I think we saw that even maybe with me and with the Americans at the last Olympics, or even with the Brits, like, a lot of us missed out over maybe discretionary sort of selection. It's difficult. I think no one really knows the story unless you've had the story yourself. So I think it's kind of great to share everyone's sort of side, because I think I have a very different story to a lot of people, because I did go overseas in that sort of period. So it's hard, because I think people don't really know what happened to me from my side. Politics and keeping everyone happy, and it's a hard journey sometimes.
How hard is that then to watch Tokyo? Because I'm no doubt you're probably watching a bunch of these athletes where you've beaten plenty of times, and you not to take away from any of the performances from the athletes who were there, but I'm sure you're just going through your head about, well, this is where I could have been. Like, I know I'm going to beat these people, things like that.
Yeah, I think it's more like the what if. What could have happened? Because all that lead up to Tokyo, I was doing all the heat prep, all the indoor trainer sessions, like, to be the best athlete I could be in Tokyo for those conditions. So, in some way I was like, oh, it's such a waste of time. But it was like, okay, well, now I know what I need to do for Paris. Like, what can we do to understand the course and stuff? So, it was really hard to watch. But I also had a lot of friends in my training group at the time that were competing at the Olympics. So it was great to see them do well. Maybe a lot of the trans didn't have the performance they wanted, but we're all here for each other. There's ups and downs in everybody's careers. So I just like to be on the start line in Paris and hopefully have a good performance for myself.
Did you allow yourself a moment though, where it was like, and sorry to your mum for the word I'm about to use, but fuck it, I'm not there. I'm going to order a pizza. I'm going to lay on the couch. I'm just going to have a me weekend where I don't have to worry about training. Like, screw this.
Oh, I think it was really hard, because I suppose everyone kind of knew that I didn't get selected and stuff, and everyone was kind of reaching out being like, hey, how are you? And I was like, oh, I don't really want to talk about it. Like, it was just a very hard moment. And also being in Europe, Tokyo was on at like 2 o'clock in the morning. So It was actually quite a big commitment to watch the race. But the Olympics only come around every 4 years. So no matter if I was there or not, I mean, even when I'm not racing normal races of triathlon, I still kind of switch on the world triathlon coverage or the PTO coverage or whatever. So I just love watching racing, and I think you learn a lot from watching racing. It was hard, but I still enjoyed watching the race, because it was raining, it was cold, and we did all this heat prep in the indoor trainer. So it was kind of a waste of time anyway.
I want to touch on one thing with the Commonwealth Games in just a moment, but just while we're on the subject of the Olympics, where are we at right now? We're obviously recording this sort of midway through February. We're still 5 or so months out from Paris, but how are things tracking now? What do we need to do to have Paris happen? I mean, can you kind of give us a bit of an update on how that's all looking?
I'm going to start racing next weekend in New Zealand. So that's the first step for me. And also there's a mixed relay. So to be on the line again for a mixed relay would be great. But to be top 8 in Yokohama is the next qualification event, to be automatic. And then after that, it's just discretion. So for me, it's more like, have I done enough over the last 2 years? and what can I do in the next 6 months to prove that I can be there or be a contender at the Olympics if I don't make the automatic criteria. So yeah, just trying to put my best foot forward and obviously trying to focus on Yokohama and yeah, Olympic distance sort of racing to try and yeah, to prove my spot.
Now, number one in Australia though, as I said at the top, Natalie, I mean, that's gotta help your cause a little bit.
I know, but I think for me, it's after Tokyo, I'm like honestly traumatized. Like you don't know that you're on a team until you get the phone call saying, yep, you've made it. And I still vividly remember the moment I didn't make the team for Tokyo. I was sitting in the car, ready to go to swimming. I was in France. And then it was like, I can't even walk into the pool. Like it was like the saddest moment for me. And I think being away from my family at the time, I remember calling my mom, what makes me kind of upset now, but yeah, called my mom. She was crying because I was crying. And yeah, it was, I hope I don't have to ever relive that moment in my life. Let's put it that way.
We want the opposite happening this year. We want that phone call. Mum, yeah. I've made the Olympics.
Yeah, it was really hard. I think because a lot of us know, like, it's not just me. It's your support team. It's your family. It's your friends that put everything into this. So, yeah, it's not about the last 2 years. It's about the 10 years of leading up to this moment. So, yeah, let's hope it's a good phone call.
Well, we're obviously going to be crossing all the fingers in that. And we do have a habit, apparently, on this show of making triathletes cry, Natalie. So I don't know. We've got a good track record here, but we'll keep pushing that. I mean, the Commonwealth Games, obviously it's not the Olympic Games, but, I mean, it's still a massive global event. You ultimately make that team. You win a bronze medal. It obviously wasn't the same, but was that some form of redemption in a way to make an event like that and also come away with a Commonwealth Games medal?
Yeah, I think people didn't realize how good that field was, especially in the women for that race. We had, probably 10, 12 girls that were competing at WTS level, no matter if they raced for Wales or for Britain or whatever. So I didn't really have a very good individual race. So I actually wasn't sure that I was going to get picked for the relay. But the high performance team at the time decided that I was the best pick. So it was great to have a medal at a major games for us because, the Commonwealth Games is obviously very important in our stepping stone in our journey towards the Olympics. And I think it showed that, we can deliver a medal when we need to under pressure. And it was a great confidence boost for us as a team was.
When does that call come? Like you have your individual race, the mixed relay is 2 days later. When do you get that call to be like, Natalie, you're in the mixed team?
Normally it's like pretty much straight after the race, they coaches kind of get together and decide who's the best sort of pick for the relay because, if it is 2 days later, then you need to rest, recover, for the day after and know what kind of training you're doing or not to overtrain. They kind of tell you quite early on who's making the team or not.
It was on the training side of things with such a quick turnaround. I mean, you've got to have some form of recovery from having your own individual event to then quickly turning around. Obviously, the mixed relays are a little bit shorter and kind of all that side of things. But how do you then, like, what is a day in between just training and kind of getting prepped? I mean, kind of what can you do in that less than 48 hours, essentially?
Oh, especially after Olympic distance, it's just like a flush. It's just like to keep moving, really. Like, you don't really need to do any hard work because you've done that day before. So it's just trying to get the body moving. Yeah, get ready, like mentally even more for like 20 minutes of pain.
20 minutes of pain. I love that. Is that how you try and get young athletes into the sport? You want 20 minutes of pain? Join triathlon.
Yeah, it's great.
that's what you want.
Yeah, I mean, we experience these emotions on a day-to-day basis. So unfortunately, it's not an uncommon emotion, but I feel like every relay just gets harder and harder at the moment. So, it's hard.
How do you, outside of the competitive side of things, just general life in a Commonwealth Games, being in a multi-sport environment, was there any opportunities to check out some other sports or kind of, hang out with any of the other athletes? I think Matt mentioned that the triathletes were sort of not really in the main Birmingham village, but was there any opportunity to kind of congregate with the other athletes at all?
Not at all. We were under very strict COVID policies still. So, we barely did anything. We just kind of got in for the race and left. So it wasn't the best, I suppose. Yeah, it was, a mixture for a lot of people of Tokyo, but now we're like kind of phasing out of COVID. But Unfortunately, no, we didn't see anything.
What did you do with the medal? We always love to find out what our guests do with their medals. Is it something on display in a sock drawer? Like, what do you do with it?
My medal is finally back at home. It was in Europe for a very long time. And my parents, like, the first time I came back to Europe end of 2022, they're like, where's your medal? And I was like, oh, I left it in Europe. They're like, oh, everyone wants to see it. So, yeah, next time I came back, I had to make sure I bring it. But no, it's actually hanging on my up in my room, which was quite cool. Good reminder.
Good reminder, because I always find it fascinating just what people do with it and kind of how they display it, being Olympic, Commonwealth Games, World Championship, anything along those lines. Is it something that you one day will look to kind of put on display, all your medals next, obviously your multiple Olympic gold medals that you're going to have? Like, kind of, is that something that you hope to have?
I actually have my first my first World Series medal framed with a photo of me sprint finishing for the line. So yeah, hopefully maybe I can try and put my Commonwealth Games medal with like a bit of a team photo. It would be quite cool. Maybe in a gym, in like a woman's man pain cave, whatever you want to call it.
Hey, so that sounds good to me. That works.
Yeah, it's good.
Is it something too, like, again, this is just coming from that Olympic / Commonwealth Games fanboy, Natalie, when it just, if I was in your shoes, I'd be keeping everything, like things like uniforms, things like that. Is it just, you know, do you keep sort of the special ones, like a Commonwealth Games tracksuit that maybe, you know, one day you can show the grandkids and go, this is what grandma did?
It was really cool, actually. I kept the blazer. I think that was like a little opening ceremony uniform. But yeah, we got like some RM Williams stuff, which was also quite nice. And I just kept like oddsies of like the running kit, of like the tracksuit or whatever. But in all honesty, we got so much stuff that I still have stuff in wrapping because I'm never going to use it. So hopefully, yeah, one day I can ship it out a little bit because I don't really know what I'm going to do with it. So yeah, we're very lucky. We've got a lot of stuff, but yeah, it's
trading. Keep it for trading one day, you know?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, one day. Yeah.
Obviously, if you're not bumping in shoulders with many other athletes, things like pin trading, was that something that you were able to kind of do at all with the other triathletes maybe?
Yeah, we did a lot because I think you have a lot of development countries there. Mm. So yeah, that was very cool for them to try and share some stuff. And we've always said, like, for them coming from like lower income third world sort of countries, it'd be nice, like, opportunity to give us some stuff like we can give them, you know, because we take a lot of stuff for granted. So there was girls that didn't even have a tri suit. Mm. So even to give away something like that, we got three or four of them. It's like a very nice gift they can actually use practically and help them on their triathlon journey. So yeah, I kind of wish there was a bit of like a fund in a way that we could maybe give some old stuff that we just probably throw in the bin that they would actually, that actually love. And yeah, I think it happens quite a lot in what we do. So
It'd
be great if we could kind of give back a little bit more.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely sounds like a great idea. Natalie, we'd like to wrap up every interview with a set of fun get to know yourself questions. Two things before I get to those that I want to touch on quickly. I discovered you used to do a bit of a blog about 6 or so years ago. What happened to this blog? It was very interesting reading it. Is it something that you kind of didn't have time for and maybe you want to revisit it again in the lead up to Paris?
I actually kind of forgot about that, to be honest. But after every race, I used to write a race report and I used to send it to everybody on my mailing list. And sometimes I would get, you know, yeah, it was quite cool. Actually, everyone used to write back to me saying, oh, thanks, Nat, that was a great report, or like, congratulations, blah, blah, blah. I used to put the same blog, actually. That was my race report, would go up on my blog. But yeah, I think we just stopped. So
I noticed that hadn't been updated since 2018. So I'm thinking,
probably correct.
You know, great season. Maybe you're just like, I don't need this anymore. My results are showing for it is. But I mean, I always love this when we get guests on the show who will do like a blog, a website, or even like vlogs or things like that, because I think it's a really great insight into the mind. It helps people like me very well when I'm doing an interview with you. But I think it's just very interesting outside of, you know, a photo on Instagram or a tweet here and there. So yeah, I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, I think, well, YouTube's a new blog, no?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think one day I'd like to get into YouTube. My partner's actually a videographer, so
hey.
I have a very good combination to start doing one. And I think he always says to me, more people are actually interested in what you do than like what you think, you know? So, yeah, I mean, I watch many other triathletes' videos and, yeah, a lot of other sports. So, yeah, hopefully one day I can put myself out there a bit more and get into that.
And it also could lead into like some sort of backdoor pilot. You could have sort of like a Drive to Survive Netflix style show following trail. I mean, pretty much every sport has one now. I mean, I don't know, is there one on triathlon or is there one coming on triathlon?
I feel like these little versions that Super League and maybe PTO do are like the Netflix version, I suppose. Yeah, but World Triathlon hasn't really caught up yet. So maybe or Interlink one day and we'll get a little bit of a insight into all of us.
We'd like to see it. We'd like to see it. The other thing we're doing, in all our guests in the lead up to Paris, we have on this show, Natalie, our own Olympic mascot, well, a show mascot. So I'd like to introduce you to Cherry. I'm sure you can tell he's a chair. I'm going to stop asking people what he is because he's kind of obvious that he's a chair. But I would like to get your thoughts on Cherry and to see if you think he might be a bit of inspiration for you in the lead up to Paris. He's been through a bit of adversity himself too. He's got a bit of a bung leg and a couple of, you know, bandages here and there. Like how could you use him for inspiration in the journey to Paris?
The dog got him, maybe. Was he a dog trainer?
He was thrown across a room by an angry Canadian, but we'll go with the dog. So,
I mean, he's cool. I feel like, yeah, he has a medal.
Yeah.
If you've had a good race, you can take a seat.
Yeah.
Take a little break. I don't know if it gets too hard, you can take a break, but.
You're the first to say that. That's a very valid answer, actually.
Yeah, I always think about that when I run past benches when I'm running. I'm like, oh, it'd be really nice to sit down right now.
Hey, this is a triathlete's best friend, basically.
It is, honestly.
Through that. All right. Well, I'm glad we're getting these sort of, you know, words of wisdom for him and kind of that. And as we keep saying, we're going to work out a way to get mini cherries done, even if being in pin form, and we can get you one and he can be used as some form of inspiration for you in Paris.
It's a recovery yes. After a good race.
Exactly.
Recovery chair.
A recovery chair. We need to get full size. Like, we need to go to like Kmart and get some chairs and paint them orange and put a chair. Like,
you probably could buy it at Kmart, to be honest.
Probably. That's actually yeah. Smart thinking. I like where you're going with that. All right. The ideas we get on this show. Perfect. Now, as I said, we wrap up every single interview with a set of get-to-know-style questions. As always, these are based on a Team Canada questionnaire they gave their athletes ahead of both Rio and Pyeongchang. There is always an optional drawing element. If you like, how are your drawing skills? I'll ask you that first.
I drew a monster for a 2.5-year-old yesterday, and I said it was shocking, so probably not great.
I mean, that's not terrible, though. I mean, I'm sure the 2.5-year-old appreciated it.
He did.
Well, there you go. If you feel the urge to, you can draw a picture of yourself, an Australian animal, and what you think a cool Olympic medal would look like. So that's just some options. If you want to flick it into us, we can put on social media. So
okay. Just
putting it out there into the big wide world. But we'll get into the real questions. And I'll start off with your favorite Olympic moment of all time is?
Oh, I think it was when I actually went to Sydney Olympics and watching, I didn't actually personally watch, I was at the track before this, but yeah, with Kathy Freeman, mm-hmm. I think was a pretty iconic moment. And yeah, I think being there when I was young was like, oh, that's so stuck. I think everyone knows about it, you know? So I think for me, that was probably a very special moment, was having the Olympics on home soil. And yeah, from Sydney, it was great to have that moment as inspiration. It's still being shown around now. So yeah, I'd say that moment.
I'm still such that Olympic geek that whenever I go see an event at Stadium Australia, I'm just like, this is where it happened. This is
yeah,
where it is.
It's so cool, honestly. Yeah, even the swimming that happened at the time and stuff. It was it was cool. I mean, yeah, when you're 8 or 9 years old, you're in awe of these people, you know. So
100%.
It was great to see it.
And now we're reaching this age, Natalie, where I get people on this show and they weren't even born for the Sydney Olympics, and it's just kind of like, what is?
Yeah, well,
life?
I train with 20-year-olds every day, so I make them feel old.
Yeah, good for them. They'll remember Brisbane, hopefully. As a kid, your favourite sports team was?
Sydney Swans.
AFL girl, so, yeah, yes. Love it.
I was very lucky. My dad used to get corporate box tickets actually through his work, so we used to go to like random games and watch stuff. So, yeah, I've always watched the AFL. And, yeah, when they lost in 2005, I think it was, after they won the premiership in 2004.
Yeah, they won 2005, 2006 is the year they lost.
And I remember crying because I was like, they're on my team and they lost. So
yeah, 2012, right? Then, you know, that kind
of. Yeah, exactly.
You know.
Yeah. They're trying to do well now. I'm like in a bit of shock. So
well, as a Carlton supporter, I I was 8 when we last won. I do remember it, but it's been a bit long. Sorry we knocked you out of the finals last year, but, you know,
yeah,
also okay, not sorry. So, you know, we've been through enough pain. It's all right. You should give us that one. If you could be any superhero, who would you be?
Oh. So I don't even know. I don't really watch this type of stuff.
That's all right. You don't. We can bypass that one if you like.
Too yeah, bypass that question. Yeah.
Two difficult questions and an interview. I'm doubling my usual intake right now. I like it. Your favorite music artists are?
Oh, I don't think I have a very favorite artist, but I like dance, like remix sort of music stuff that like maybe with like pop songs, but they've like put a like a sort of like a dance beat to it. Like that's really my type of music. So. Yeah, like gets me out the door in the mornings.
Is that Pump Up? Like, do you use that at all before a race?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I just try and find good playlists on Spotify. And once I find a good playlist, I'm like that person that's stuck on it for the next 2 months. And I'm like, I've heard this playlist stop for so long now, but I refuse to change because I like it so much. So, yeah.
Is it a bit superstitious too that like maybe if you've got a list and you keep getting good results after listening to it, you just can't get rid of it?
Sometimes it's a song. It's generally like one song that's like, okay, this is my song I'm going to listen to on the trainer before I like go out to a race.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, my actual playlist is called like Vibes.
Ah.
So I just have like all my good vibe songs that like can work for like being at home or they can work for me out running.
Yep.
It's like a good combination.
Nice. Do you have any other sort of routines before a race? Like you got to put a shoe on a certain foot first or wear a certain sock or something along those lines?
Not really as such. Oh, no, not at all.
No.
I think every race is so different. It's like you can't have a routine. It's too stressful. It's always something happening. So I think
your routine is to not have a routine, basically.
I think it is actually. I know what's going on,
yep.
But you just have to get on with it. If something's thrown at you, you just have to adjust.
As long as you know where you are and that you're about to jump in the water to start a race, then you're probably...
Yes, I mean, I've had a few dreams where I've missed a race start, so hopefully it never actually happens in real life.
Just don't show up to like the sport climbing in Paris and go, oh shit, this isn't my event. You know, what am I doing here? This is wrong. This is wrong. Your favorite place to compete is?
Oh, I think either, I'd say in Japan. I love Japan. Just like it's always a good build up. The people are lovely. Like, I just really like the course there. Also had some good results. But yeah, I think Hamburg's always been a pretty special one. The crowds there are absolutely insane. They always come back the same as the year before, even better. So I've had some good results there also, but I think I've also raced in Hamburg maybe 13 times now. So it's got a special place for me. In my triathlon racing career.
Now, I'm sure you often don't get comparisons between Hamburg, Japan and Devonport. I'm from Tasmania. I'm not from Devonport, but I believe they have a bit of a triathlon scene. Have you competed much in Devonport over the years?
I have. Devonport was like one of my first ever junior races, actually. And I actually got the Spirit of Tasmania home.
Convenient. It's right there, right?
Yeah, I really did have to get the Spirit of Tasmania back to Melbourne and then get the train from Melbourne to Sydney because there was no more flights.
Wow. That's a long journey.
Yeah, it was. But it shows you my commitment to triathlon. I really loved it. And I actually came home. I won. So I came home with a cheese board. I still have it at home. So it was. My cheese board on the ferry back to Australia.
Your 24-hour journey then back to Sydney, basically what
yeah,
8 hours
on a ferry? Probably like was
10 hours or so on a train. That's ridiculous. Wow,
yeah.
That is a long journey, especially even Devonport.
I know, but yeah, Devonport is it's quite known now. I think there's a race there in March this year. I don't think I'll be going, but. Yeah, every year it's like sprint Oceania champs, Australian champs. So, yeah, lots of people do actually go there.
I will say, as a Hobartian, Devonport is the second best city in Tasmania. So, sorry to Launceston, but it's true. Let's be honest. If you could eat one food for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Oh, I'm going to say chicken schnitzel.
Oh, yes. That is a good answer.
So good.
Now, is that just like, are we talking plain snitty? Are we going palmy? Like, kind of, what are we thinking here?
Oh, like a proper snitty, like, or even like a veal schnitzel or something like from Germany. It's like, it really hits the spot. But yeah, in Australia, it's definitely a palmy.
Yeah.
It's like with some fries. Yeah.
Oh,
it's good.
You do like, I know when I've been living overseas and people will say like, what do you miss? What food do you miss? And, you know, Tim Tams, all those sort of things, cliche, you can buy them easily. It's the ones you can't get right, like a good chicken palmy. Dim sim. I'm a sucker for a good dim sim, which you can't get a proper Aussie, like trashy $2 takeaway store dim sim like overseas, can you?
Yeah, but it's like sushi, right? Like we have chicken sushi. And everyone's like, that's not sushi. I'm like, yes, it is. It
works. To us it is.
Good
answers. I like that. What's one thing that you have always wanted to do?
Oh, that's a hard question. I feel like I've actually done quite a lot in my young life, to be honest. I was a bit adventurous when I was young, so.
Things like skydiving, things like that.
I have skydived.
Great.
Yep, I wouldn't do it again. I like my life too much, so I wouldn't do it again.
That's a good
answer. I don't know. I think it's just like maybe travel more within Australia and New Zealand, you know. I think that's like something that I would love to do. We travel so much around the world and we see so many different places, but I think we underestimate how good it actually is here. And the little time that I spent in New Zealand, I've loved every second of it. So
where do they do the triathlon? Where's the sort of the events in New Zealand?
We have one in Napier in a few weeks. I'll be heading to Taupo at the end of the year for 70.3 World Champs. New Plymouth have been over the years. I did Auckland World Champs.
Great.
Yeah, so quite a lot actually.
Quite a few.
Yeah.
Kind of North Island, it sounds like. They don't do any in the south, do they at all? Or
Wanaka is on this weekend actually.
Right, of course. Okay.
So yeah, they do. It's just whatever you want to go to, I suppose.
Yeah, true. Well, actually, it's funny you mentioned sort of wanting to do a bit more traveling around Australia. The question here that they ask the Canadian athletes, your favourite place to visit in Canada, I'm going to go with your favourite place to visit in Australia is?
I think I was very lucky a few years ago to go do the Hamilton Island Triathlon.
Oh, nice.
And we went out like to a few different islands when we were up there, and honestly, it's so beautiful. Like, it's great to see, that type of area. And you don't really see that anywhere else in the world. Like, people always say, oh, the beach is so nice in Europe. And I'm like, no.
It's not a beach.
We're really living life here and all. So I think, northern Queensland is a beautiful part of the world. And, generally when we go on holidays or when we've been on holidays as kids, we've always come up to Queensland. So, I really like it up here.
What was the slogan they used to say, where else but Queensland? So,
Yeah, it's true.
Probably fits that quite well. Your favourite cartoon to watch growing up was?
Oh. I used to watch, what's the show? Like Saturday Morning Disney and those Cheese TV
Cheese
and
TV,
stuff.
Yes.
Stuff like that was on. I used to love that type of stuff.
Yep. Have that anymore, do they? I don't know what kids watch these days. I sound so old when I say that sentence, but like, what do they watch? You know?
I used to come home from swimming on a Saturday morning and try and win the jackpot prize. That's what I remember.
Did you ever win it?
No, I never won it. No. Damn. But those shows that were on there were always, I loved them. They were great.
What's the, they had a, Channel 9 had like a Warner Brothers one, didn't they, with like Looney Tunes on an afternoon. I remember coming home from school. I think it was maybe just called Warner TV or something like that. But I think,
I should probably too busy at swimming training, so I've never watched it.
us non-athletes just coming home being lazy, right? You know, not training for an Olympics. We got to watch Looney Tunes. If you had to do karaoke, what's your one song you would sing?
No songs.
No to karaoke.
No one needs to hear my voice.
Well, there goes that one. I was going to start playing some music if you had started going there. So no karaoke. All right, there we go. We'll scrap that next one. Last question for you today, Natalie. If you could be an Olympian in any other sport other than your own, what would it be?
Oh, There's so many to choose from, really. I'll probably have to do something of like swim, bike, or run, to be honest. It'd be nice to be really, really good at one thing. Mm-hmm. So I know lots of people say that we're just average at all three. So yeah, I mean, I've always loved swimming, so I'm going to say swimming. Okay. You really, like when you watch a good swimmer swim, it's just like, yeah, it's just so nice to watch. I've been watching Doha at the moment, World Champs.
Yep.
And I'm like, oh, I wish I could be like that. It was so nice.
Maybe if you weren't recruited, it could have been you right now. Who knows?
Probably not.
Never say never. Never say. I just we learned so much on this show about so many sports where people get pinched from other sports. We see it so much in, say, aerials, that like just like leave the gymnasts alone. Let the gymnasts become gymnasts and stop stealing them to be aerialists. We want to see these people who are getting poached from sports, Natalie, to stay. So you could have been better than Emma McKean. You could have been. Who knows?
Yeah. I could have been, yeah.
Whoever recruited you, blame them.
My coach.
Yeah. Took away a career. Natalie, it has been so fun to learn about your career and everything else and get you to be so honest and open with everything that has happened across that. We're crossing all fingers and toes and everything for you ahead of Paris. And if people want to follow the journey, obviously, if you're restarting the blog, great. But Instagram, Twitter, where can people follow you along the way between now and Paris?
I suppose I post a lot of my stuff on Instagram. That's probably my main. And actually my Facebook athlete page is where I generally try and post both my stuff. So, yeah, hopefully people can follow along, learn a little bit about me also.
We will tag you in that in our post in this so people can follow you on that journey. And we look forward to that. I do also just want to quickly apologize to your mum for dropping a couple of swear words. That was my bad. I apologize, but hopefully that hasn't taken away from her enjoying hearing her daughter on this episode. So we've enjoyed you on here on the show, Natalie.
It's good. Thank you for having me.
And a big thanks to Natalie for her time. An absolutely amazing chat there, learning about her career and her progression and just the hardships and everything that she's overcome, particularly around that Tokyo selection. It's fascinating to hear her be so open and honest around what happened there and the politics that can come into sport sometimes and just everything that comes of that. So obviously we're crossing all our fingers and toes around that to see just what will come from later this year to see if she will be able to make the team for Paris. Obviously being the number one ranked athlete right now in triathlon in Australia for females, where we're going to assume that is, as I said in the chat, a bit of a positive on her column for making that team. So we'll cross all those fingers and toes that is to happen this year. If you do want to see the video version of that interview, of course, you can head to YouTube to see that and check all of that out there, as well as all our other past interviews with all our great guests we've had on the show, as well as our future guests that we'll have coming up in the lead up between now and Paris, because we're only a couple of months away now. It keeps getting closer. Every time I close one of these interviews off, it's closer and closer and closer. So obviously now getting so close to Paris, you can taste it. And you know that the coverage is going to be great here on Off the Podium as we move forward. If you want to never miss an episode, remember to subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast from, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, you name it. We're on there. Social media, I've already mentioned YouTube. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. We are on TikTok. Get up to date with all of those and let us know what you think of the show. If you want to send us a question for a guest, if you want us to get a certain guest on the show, let us know. We always appreciate the feedback and we always appreciate the suggestions. We read all the comments we get from you and we always appreciate the support along the way. Big thanks again to Natalie for her time on the show. Thanks to you for listening. Remember, as always, a shout out to the Birmingham Bull, Jason Momoa. Put a sock in a mountain. You took the words right out of my mouth. And most importantly, remember to go elect.